There were no clouds in the desert sky to provide a canvas on which the setting sun could paint its setting. The great red orb dropped like a stone below the horizon, and almost immediately the night came down upon the heat-drugged land. Ryder waited until he could no longer make out the opposite bank of the river, then gave orders to Bakshi to cast off. With his engine telegraph at dead slow ahead, he eased the intrepid Ibis out through the harbour entrance and into the main stream of the river. As soon as he felt the tug of the current, he turned the bows into it and rang down to Jock for half a head. They pushed up against the flow of the river, and Ryder listened anxiously to the beat of the engine. He could feel the hull quivering under his feet, but there was no rough vibrations. He held her at that speed until they had rounded the first bend of the Blue Nile, and a long, deep glide of the river lay ahead. He took a deep breath and rang down for three quarters ahead. The Ibis responded with the panache of a toreador parading into the bullring. Ryder let out a long sigh of relief. "Take the wheel, Bakshit. I'm going below." He slid down the engine room companionway. Jock was shining the beam of his bullseye lantern onto the shaft, and Ryder went to stand beside him. They watched it turning in its new bearings. Jock lowered the lantern, and in its golden light they studied the outline of the silver column minutely, looking for the tiniest flutter or tremble of distortion. Like a gyroscope, it was spinning so evenly that it seemed to be standing still. Jock cocked his head.
"Oh, listen to her sing, Skipper."
He raised his voice above the hiss and slide of the cylinders.
"Sweeter than Lily McTavish."
"Who in creation is Lily McTavish?"
"Barmaid at the Bull and Bush."
Ryder let out a roar of laughter.
I never realised what a connoisseur of opera you are, Jock." "Can't really say I know much about it, Skipper, but I do know a fine pair of tits when I see 'em."
"Can I push the Ibis up to full revolutions?"
"Just like Lily McTavish. I reckon she's game for anything."
"I'd like to meet this Lily."
"Get in the queue behind me, Skipper."
Still laughing, Ryder went back to his bridge and took the wheel from Bakshit. When he pushed the telegraph to full ahead, the Ibis surged forward against the current.
12 knots, Ryder shouted gleefully.
He felt a great weight slip from his shoulders. He was no longer a prisoner in the fever city of Khartoum. Once more, all 3,000 miles of the Nile belonged to him, his high road to freedom and fortune. He pulled back the lever of the engine telegraph to half ahead and kept on up the river. Before he reached the next wide bend, he had counted 5 head of sail, all heavily laden trading dhows coming down from the Abyssinian highlands to Omdurman. He turned across the flow and ran swiftly back downstream. Then he shouted down the voice tube to the engine room,
"Jock, come up here where we can talk."
They leant on the bridge rail together. "After what happened at the compound yesterday, I'm not taking any more chances. The mood of the people is ugly and dangerous. The city's crawling with agents and sympathisers of the Mahdi. They'll know by morning that the Ibis is seaworthy again. We must expect an attempt at sabotage. From here on, we must keep an armed guard on board 24 hours a day."
"I was going to do that anyhow," Jock nodded.
"I've already moved my bed and duffel back on board, and I'll be sleeping with a pistol under my mattress. My stokers will be taking turns at guard duties."
"Excellent, Jock. But apart from that, as soon as it's light enough, I want you to move her from the harbour into the canal and tie her up at the jetty at the back gate of the compound. She'll be much safer there and easier to load."
"You're thinking about your ivory?" Jock asked.
"What else?" Ryder smiled.
"But also I want to be able to make a run for it if things go wrong again. I'll be waiting for you to bring the Ibis up to the canal at first light."